Thank you so much for that wonderful musical testimony. You know, I've had a hard time deciding which is my favorite part of the service. The music that we enjoy so much here every Sabbath, or the children's story. And, you know, I struggle with that decision. It's a tough one. But today, what I'd like to do is focus on a story from the Bible. And you know, as we open the scripture, I would like to ask you for just a moment of prayer. Would you join with me as we bow our head? Precious Lord, as we open your sacred word, we would ask this morning that you would show us your goodness, your greatness, and your way, and that you would lead us in it, in Jesus' name. Amen. You know, the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, is just loaded with great stories. Some of them are encouraging. Some of them present great lessons for us. Some of them are actually comical, you know, kind of like Balaam talking to his donkey. There are plenty of great stories in the Old Testament, and some of them we know very well. And I'm going to ask to talk with you this morning for just a few moments about a story that you've heard many times, I've heard many times, we've probably all read about it, read it in the Old Testament in the book of 1 Kings, especially in the 19th chapter. You know, Jan just read us the text there. And as we read that text and as we consider that story, of course, it's in the context of a much larger experience that relates to a particular prophet, a man of God, a powerful man of God, not just an ordinary guy, but a man of God in a particular location, at a particular time, and at a particular moment in his own experience. Today we're going to think about this man. He's in probably one of the worst places that I could think of, that is the worst environment. Absolute polar opposite from the beautiful Southwest Oregon environment we enjoy here. This was the environment down there in the southern tip of the Sinai Desert. And here was a man of God, all alone in a desert cave. I can't imagine myself a much more uninviting environment to find oneself in. I love the environment we have around us here in Oregon where we live, but in the southern part of the Sinai Desert, in a mountain, all alone, dry, dusty, desolate place, what a terrible place. But that's where Elijah found himself, and that's where the Lord caught up with Elijah. And when the Lord came to Elijah there in this cave on the side of a mountain, he said a few things to Elijah. And one of the things that he said right away was, Elijah, I want you to go outside the cave, stand on the mountain out there, and pay attention. Listen to what is said. So Elijah goes outside the cave. We all know this story. He stands there, and what happens? A huge, terrible, terrifying wind comes up, sometimes referred to as a tempest. And the text you just heard read made it clear what occurred there. Such a powerful wind that it tore stones from the mountain, broke the rocks in pieces, shook the mountain. That's a terrible wind. If a wind like that occurred here in our area, we would have big, tall trees down across the highways and blocking the roads and taking out the power lines, and we would be out of power for a couple of weeks. That's the way it would be here. But in South Sinai, up in the mountain, in the desert, it was just terrifying. But the important part was, you heard the text, God wasn't in the wind. And then following the wind was an earthquake that could shake the entire mountain, rattle the cave that Elijah was sitting in before he was called out to stand there and witness. And God wasn't in the earthquake either. followed by a fire, blazing, heat, light, terrifying fire, and God wasn't in the fire. God was not in the wind, the earthquake, the fire, either one. And then, and only then, came a certain voice, a still, small voice. And the still, small voice, I've always wondered exactly what did it sound like? You know, in the King James Version of the scriptures that I'm acquainted with and which I grew up with, I guess, it says, a still, small voice. What do you think that sounded like? What did it sound like to Elijah? You know, there are some other translations or versions of the scripture. They use different language. For example, the New International Version calls this a whisper. You know, a still small voice, a whisper. In a French translation that I like to use, it's the Louis Segond translation of the scriptures. It calls it a murmur, a light and soft murmur. That's what the French calls it. A still small voice, a whisper, a murmur. What does that really mean to you? To me, it kind of means that it could have been even something that was not really audible, maybe not even heard, maybe an idea or a thought or a compelling feeling. I don't know what your interpretation might be, but mine has been that it could have been a variety of impressions that came to Elijah at that moment. But in any case, regardless of how it might have sounded, it had a message, had a certain thing to say to Elijah. And that's where I would kind of like to come to bear today. I've heard many times the still small voice referred to. I've heard many times this text that we read this morning leads up to the still small voice, because God wasn't in the wind, wasn't in the earthquake, wasn't in the fire, but then there was a still small voice. My question then is, did you ever notice? What did the still small voice say? Or what did the voice say that followed this experience? And that's what I'd like to focus on today. What did that small voice have to say? Well, you know, that's a simple question. I'd like to just read that text together with you, if you don't mind. Now, I know Jan just read it, just in her beautiful voice. And I'm going to just read through this again. Now, this is the New King James Version. Then he said, he being the Lord, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountain and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, then, a still, small voice. Okay, that's what the text says. What did the still, small voice have to say? There was a simple question, very simple question, simpler than operating this little push button here. When Elijah heard the voice, he wrapped his face in his mantle, went out and stood in the entrance of the cave, because the Lord said, go out and stand in the entrance and listen to this. And the voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? I never heard people talk about that part of the discussion before. It always says, okay, the Lord wasn't in the wind, the Lord wasn't in the fire, the Lord wasn't in the earthquake. There was a still small voice that came along. but I've never really heard anybody talk very much about what the still small voice actually said. And that's what I'd like to focus on today, if you don't mind. It's real plain. It's a question. Just a simple question. Very direct question. It says, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, I think it's pretty clear that this question is structured in a way that a very simple, direct answer could be provided. It has three fundamental components that I see. Who it's addressed to, that's Elijah. It says, you, what are you doing here, Elijah? And you have the you in the sentence. You have the antecedent. Don't have Sandra here to help me with the English structure of the sentence here, but got you and Elijah there. What are you doing here, Elijah? There's no question about who's being addressed here. It's Elijah. And then beyond that, what are you doing here? Well, the here is very plain too. Right here in this cave, a hole in the side of a mountain. Talk about a desolate place. I was thinking about this too. The southern part of the Sinai Peninsula, this has got to be one of the most uncomfortable places in the world. Dry, lonely, ugly. I've never actually had an opportunity to travel in the Holy Land. Some of you, there are some, I don't know, are you here? Anybody here who's been to the Holy Land? I know that some of our folks have done that recently. I've never been there. The closest I've ever been is in an airplane, flying from Egypt over to Greece and looking out on the east side, on the right side of the airplane, looking east, I could see the coastline. I could see the coastline of Israel. But that's the closest I've ever been. But I can imagine, and only imagine, how uncomfortable and ugly it must have been sitting there in that cave. Here, you, Elijah, here, this cave, a hole in the side of the mountain. And then the last part of that question, what is it that you're doing? And to me, this is really, really the crux of the whole thing. What are you doing here, Elijah? I'd like to step back now and look at each of these three elements. The you, the here, and the what doing. Now, I just missed the people who could have straightened us out on the Holy Land. These are the experts on the Holy Land. They visited there. They've traveled all over. So we might ask them to help us with a few other items as we go along. But here's Elijah, sitting in the hole in the side of a mountain, in a cave, down there in the southern tip of Sinai Peninsula. What is he doing here right now? That was the question. Well, I want to go back now and talk about the you, the Elijah. This is not just some ordinary Hebrew pedestrian who happened to look for a place to sit down and spend the night. This is not some ordinary person who happened to be hiking through the desert and look for a place to rest. This is Elijah, the renowned prophet of God. This is Elijah, the founding father of the Hebrew Prophets Society. This is Elijah, the one that we hear about in the Old Testament, all of these magnificent feats that he performed in the name of God. We hear his entire story there. And he's introduced there just a couple chapters before 1 Kings 19. And we see him progress through an incredible experience. He's the one that is first introduced, as far as we're concerned, when he was brought in to face Ahab. But then again, at the end of his experience, at the end of his ministry, just a short time after Elijah and Elisha crossed the Jordan River and went a short distance, it says, it's this incredible experience that we have recorded there where Elijah, standing there in the path, is met by a chariot of fire that appeared with horses of fire and suddenly took Elijah up in a whirlwind into heaven. This is one of the outstanding images in the Old Testament. This is the Elijah we're talking about. This is the Elijah that was sitting alone in that cave. This is not just an ordinary person. In addition, not only in the Old Testament is Elijah referred to, but in the words of the gospel writers in the New Testament, he's brought back into view. There in the first chapter of Luke, when Zacharias is being informed by the angel that John the Baptist, his son, is going to be born, the angel said, referring to John the Baptist, he will go before him, him being Jesus, the Christ, the expected Messiah, he will also go before him in the spirit and power of Elijah. Who else could he refer to? He refers to Elijah. And in the book of Matthew are recorded even the words of Jesus referring also to John the Baptist. And he says, if you're willing to receive it, he, John, is the Elijah who is to come. Referred to several times right there in the Gospels. The image in Mark, the book of Mark, the Gospel according to Mark. Jesus' transfiguration, what a glorious view this is. And who is there? Elijah appeared to them with Moses. And Elijah and Moses were talking with Jesus. There he is. Well, dear folks, I don't think we could find a more appropriate person to occupy the central role in this story here in the cave on the side of the mountain in the southern tip of Sinai. It's Elijah, powerful prophet, powerful man of God, introduced there as Elijah the Tishbite. You know, he came from a little place called Tishbe on the east side of the Jordan River in an area, region called Gilead. Elijah the Tishbite. He's the one who was brought into view, particularly in the 17th chapter of 1 Kings, where already an established and powerful representative of the Lord in that area, this prophet, this man of God, was called by the Lord and said, who said, I want you to go and face King Ahab. Now, Ahab also has been described. Evil king. Says the Bible said he did evil in the sight of the Lord. More so even than the evil kings who preceded him. And not only that, he went and married Jezebel, the daughter of a neighboring idolatrous king, and brought all of her idols, idol worship, Baal worship, and her priests and prophets with her. Ahab and Jezebel were leading the Israelite nation further and deeper into idolatry all the time. And the Lord said, Elijah, you're going to go face Ahab, and you're going to give him this message, which he's not going to like, that we are going to impose a famine on this land. And, of course, Elijah said that to Ahab. Ahab, of course, was shocked. He didn't like it. Elijah fled from the presence of Ahab. You know the story. Crossed the Jordan, hid away in the ravine, fed by the ravens, all of these things. And then you remember in the story also how Elijah returned after 3 years because the Lord sent an angel who told Elijah, it's time to go back 3 years later and tell Ahab, okay, the time is up. We're going to have a showdown now. Ahab called all the representatives of the tribes of Israel together, gathered at the Mount Carmel, had the showdown there with the prophets and priests of Baal, built their altar, screamed and hollered and danced and pled with their God to send down fire to burn their sacrifice. And, of course, it never happened. Elijah's mocking them the whole time, saying, yeah, holler louder, maybe he's not listening, maybe he left, maybe he's asleep, maybe Baal went on a vacation, you need to holler louder. And then, of course, when it was Elijah's turn, he called on the name of the Lord, and the Lord sent fire down that consumed not only the sacrifice, but evaporated all the water that they had saturated the things with, and even burnt up the rocks, the stones that the altar was built upon. Following that, of course, Elijah. Now, this is the Elijah we're talking about. This is no mean person. This is Elijah. He turned to Ahab, and he says, Ahab, you better go eat some lunch because the rain is coming pretty soon. Elijah goes out and watches, sends his servant out to take a look. They repeated that several times, and finally here comes a cloud. There's this dark cloud coming, and Elijah says, oh, boy, here it comes. We better get out of here. He tells Ahab, you better beat it and get home. Ahab jumps in his chariot and heads for Jezreel. And it says that, get this, Elijah then took off and it started raining. And Elijah took off and ran from Mount Carmel to Jezreel. And it says he beat Ahab. Ahab's going in his chariot. Elijah beat him there. Now, our experts from the Holy Land can straighten me out on this. I've never been there in the Holy Land. So I looked at the map. It looks like the distance from Mount Carmel depends, I guess, on which side of the mountain you start from. But from there to Jezreel, it looks like could be about 16 to 20 miles. As the crow flies. Now, if that crow had to run in the rain, barefoot, all the way down there, I think it would feel a lot farther than that. But when Ahab got to Jezreel and he talked to Jezebel and he told Jezebel what happened, she was irate and she sent a message to Elijah, and she says, Elijah, by this time tomorrow, what happened to those prophets is going to happen to you. And Elijah was terrified. Now this is Elijah, the man who just called down fire from heaven in the name of the Lord. This is Elijah who just faced down the 450 prophets and priests of Baal. This is Elijah whom the Lord had sent to go face to face with the evil king Ahab. This is Elijah, the powerful prophet of God, and Jezebel threatens him and he's scared to death. It says he took off, he fled, and he went south, straight south. It says he went all the way down to Beersheba. Now I looked at the map again. That's about 100 miles, again, as the crow flies. I don't know exactly if you had to walk. And he took his servant with him, and they got to Beersheba, and he left the servant there, and he went on again into the desert south of Beersheba. You know the story, how he was exhausted, he fainted, he sat down under a tree. It could have been, must have been a scrub of a tree down there in the desert. Angel came to him, refreshed him, and the Bible says that in the strength of that refreshment, he went another 40 days and 40 nights into the desert south, down to the end of the wilderness, the desert of Sinai, and ended up in the cave on the side of the mountain there in the desert. That was Elijah. Now that's from Beersheba down to Sinai. It looks on the map, it looks like that's almost another 100 miles. So Elijah has gotten down to this point on foot, fleeing for his life in his mind, 200 and some odd miles, scared to death, worried, alone, dehydrated, I imagine, probably starving to death at the same time. And there he is. And there he is in the cave on the side of the mountain, a dirty, dry, dusty hole in the side of the mountain. And this is where the Lord caught up with him. Well, when the Lord caught up with Elijah, I can imagine that Elijah was probably at about the lowest point in his own personal existence. Okay, that's Elijah. I said there was a question here that we wanted to look at. What are you doing here, Elijah? The you was Elijah. What about the here? The here is this hole in the side of the mountain, this cave. Right there in that side of the mountain. Dry, ugly, desolate, lonely. Elijah, alone, afraid, dejected, probably depressed. And as he's there, what is the question that was posed to him? What are you doing, Elijah? What are you doing here, Elijah? Well, that question was a very simple question. Simple, clear, direct. You would think that it would elicit a simple, clear, direct response. There's no need for any other explanation. The Lord didn't ask, how did you get here, Elijah? How was the trip? How are things back home? What are the conditions back there where you came from? That wasn't part of the question. The question was very simple, very short, just a few words. Said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Interesting to look at how Elijah responded. You know, it kind of reminds us of the way some of us might respond when asked a simple, direct question that we really don't want to answer. You know, reminds me of some things I've heard recently. For example, heard a politician the other night on the news. Simple question was asked, a question that could have been answered by probably a simple yes or no, or maybe I don't know, you know, one of those three. Real simple, one of three easy responses. But that man talked for 12 to 15 minutes straight and never got close to the question that was asked. Good politician. I heard a story. I don't know, maybe you folks probably heard this story too, about the another politician some years ago was asked, why did the chicken cross the road? Now, questions that start with why are always difficult. If it started with how or when or something like that, you could probably pin that down and nail it with a pretty direct answer. Why did the chicken cross the road? And the gentleman said, now this is a response to the question, why did the chicken cross the road? And the gentleman said, what's important to me is what side of the road that chicken is on. Is it on our side? Is it on their side? Is it with us or against us? Is it standing with us in defense of liberty and freedom and the American way? Or is it attacking us and bringing in communism and dictatorship and everything we don't want to see? That fool chicken needs to make up its mind, get on the right side of the road, and stay there. Okay, really, really, really nice little speech. Never got close to answering the question about the chicken crossing the road. And Elijah almost did the same thing, understanding that he's in a little different environment here, but a little bit the same thing. Let's read that together in 1 Kings 19 and now verse 14. And this is Elijah responding to the simple question, what are you doing here, Elijah? Elijah says, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I'm the only one left, and now they're after me. Not exactly those words. But this is Elijah's response. Did he respond to the question, what are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing? No, he gave a good explanation of why he came and why he fled and how things were back home, what the conditions were before he fled. I also think it's interesting to note that the Lord immediately responded. And you might notice as you read through the text, I don't know if you're following through in your own Bible, the Lord really gave no attention whatsoever to Elijah's explanation of the terrible conditions, how he got there and all the things that brought him there and why he came to the cave. The Lord didn't ask that question, and the Lord didn't spend any time dealing with it. What did the Lord do? I think I skipped a couple of things here. I did. The Lord said to him very simply and directly, "This is what you're going to do, Elijah." Notice, not one word, not one syllable directed toward Elijah's explanation of why he came to the cave, why he fled from Jezebel, what the conditions were back home, the terrible things that people have done. Not one bit of attention whatsoever is recorded on the part of the Lord addressing those things. And the Lord said, "Elijah, we were talking about what you're doing. That was the question. This is what you're going to do." The Lord said to him, and actually this continues on for a couple of verses and several lines. He said, "Elijah, go back the way you came. In fact, go on up through the Jordan Valley. You're going to go all the way up to Damascus. And when you get to Damascus, you're going to anoint Hazael king over the Syrians. And you're going to anoint Nimshi king over Israel. Because we have some business to take care of. And on your way up there, by the way, right there where... close to where you came from, close to where you grew up out there at Tishbe, you were on the east side of the Jordan River. Just on the west side, you're going to stop in there, and you are going to look up a man named Elisha. You're going to conscript Elisha, and you are going to give him instruction on his future. After you've done that, Elisha, Hazael, Nimshi, and a couple of others are going to carry on and finish up some business that we need to take care of that we have not addressed at this moment." Notice that the Lord paid absolutely no attention to what had gone on before. All the attention is to what Elijah is going to do immediately. Go back the way you came, head up north, anoint Elisha, anoint Hazael, anoint Nimshi. This is what you're going to do, Elijah. Well, I imagine Elijah was a little bit stunned by all of that. But the fact is, the question was very simple to begin with. What are you doing here, Elijah? And the Lord's response dealt specifically with what you should be doing, Elijah. I've still got to practice with this little clicker here. I wonder what that button does that I keep pushing. It doesn't make the slides change, but if I push the right one, it does it. Well, folks, we talked about this question. What are you doing here, Elijah? The question, what are you doing? What I really wanted to do is put that out there, spend a lot of time maybe talking about the you being Elijah, the here being the cave there on the side of the mountain, and the what doing. Okay, we kind of figured out what he should have been doing or what the Lord intended for Elijah to do. I'd like to kind of swing that around now, turn it over, and bring it closer to home. For example, the you. Okay, that was Elijah. If we brought it into the modern day, could we maybe create or imagine at least a modern-day stand-in in place of Elijah? I thought about that. I thought, well, who should I put in place of Elijah? I thought, wow, you know, probably the smartest thing would be to put myself in there. What would it feel like if that question had been addressed this way? What are you doing here, George? Boy, that changes it a lot. And not only George in place of Elijah, but what are you doing here, George? And the other part of the question, what? You know, the what are you doing? George, here, what are you doing? Boy, that changes things a lot. Maybe you'd like to insert your own name. I won't ask you to stand up and do that. Have you ever thought about that? You know, if the Lord ever asked you that question, what are you doing here? Not Elijah, but our own name. How would you respond? Would I respond as Elijah did? This is how I got here. This is all the problems I've had in the past. These are all the things that keep me from doing, you know, the things that I wanted to do. This is why life is so difficult. Is that the way I would respond? I'm not sure. Talking about bringing it home. You know, Elijah had to deal with it there in a very desolate environment. What if we turned that around and instead of being hiding out, instead of hiding out in a desolate, dirty, dry, dusty cave, starving, what if we brought that home a little bit and said, well, you know, that could be in this beautiful country, in this great land where we have so many privileges, where we have liberty, we have the freedom of expression, we have freedom to move about, we can go all over the place without even asking permission. We have the freedom to worship as the Lord has directed us to worship. All these freedoms that we have, these privileges that we have, give us advantages that Elijah sure didn't have back there in that cave. He was pretty well stuck. If he wanted to travel somewhere, he had to keep looking over his shoulder to see if Ahab's guys were after him. It was a whole different world. What about the technical advantages that we enjoy? Thinking about this. The technology that was absolutely not even dreamed of a couple of generations ago, or even one generation ago for a lot of it, the ability to access and manage and use information. Think about that. With a click of a button nowadays, we can access all kinds of information, and we can transmit it anywhere in the world in an instant. We have the ability to communicate. You know, think about Elijah's time. If he wanted to communicate something to someone, basically he would have to walk over there and tell them. Isn't that how he would do it? Even in the apostles' times, in the missionary journeys of St. Paul, I've thought about, how long would it take to communicate the gospel from the place where you're standing to the place where you want it to go? If you think about that, the greatest speed over a long distance, up until just a few hundred years ago, the greatest speed that could be attained over a long distance was the speed that a man could walk. Even riding a horse or a camel really wasn't any faster over a long distance than what a man could walk. Today, I can go up here to Eugene or Portland, get on an airplane, and in the same day, that night, I can be at my daughter's house in New England. Imagine that. Or in a few more hours, I can be anywhere in the world. We can take the gospel. We can take the message in ways that Elijah would not even have dreamed. What about if we brought it home? And what if we actually brought it really down close to home? Say here in Roseburg, right here in our own church. The thing is, though, the question hasn't changed. The question has not changed a bit. The question is still the same. What are you doing here? I'm going to suggest that there are some certain things that can be done here, everywhere, anywhere, at any time. I've thought about this a lot. If the question would pert to me, as it was to Elijah, what are you doing? The you might be George. The here might be right here in Roseburg. Might be in Better Life Roseburg, Seventh-day Adventist Church, for that matter. The what are you doing part of it, the what doing part of that question, boy, I've thought about that for a long time. You know, in the early days of my Christian experience, I thought, you know, I'm really impressed that my life should be a life of service. And I've dedicated my life to service ever since. But what kind of service? And I'm thinking, boy, it ought to be something that's really, really valuable for the Lord. And early on, you know, I thought about people like Dr. Albert Schweitzer. Have you ever heard that name? This wonderful medical missionary to Africa who provided wonderful care and opportunities and healing for the people who needed it in the neediest places of Africa. I thought, well, how about maybe if I would be a very effective and well-known preacher of the gospel? My mind immediately turned to Billy Graham, Martin Luther King, or even others that we know more personally, because I used to listen to the Voice of Prophecy on the radio. That's where I really picked up on things. And I thought, wow, maybe I could do things like that. And then I got to thinking also, you know, I really probably don't have those gifts. Recognizing at the same time that if the Lord so choose, he could probably endow me with any gift that was necessary. If I look around this church, there are gifts right and left. Young lady who brought us the music this morning, wonderful gift. Thank you again. Other musical talent here. I'm looking at them here. I'll name a few names. Jan on the piano, oh my word. Donnell, piano and singing. Others of us, I better stop using names because I'll miss somebody and then, you know, somebody will feel left out. But one I would not hesitate to mention is like Leamy Beth. We play a piano. Leamy Beth comes in. She plays the organ. She plays the piano. She plays the cello. She plays the flute. I don't know if she plays a banjo, but I'm waiting to see her walk in with a banjo one of these days. But who knows? I think she could do it all. Fact is, people have gifts, and people can use those gifts. But there's one thing that I'm sure that the Lord could always expect me to do. I don't know that I have the musical talent. I don't know if I have the ability to go do magnificent things like, I don't have it. I'm sure the Lord could plug it in if he wanted to. And I visualize this. What if he sent me one day to go and stand in the assembly of the United Nations and proclaim the gospel in such power that all these delegates from the United Nations were suddenly converted and clamoring for baptism? Wouldn't that be something? Think the Lord could do that? Probably the Lord could. I kind of backed off from that a little bit. But there are magnificent feats that I'm sure the Lord could endow me to perform. On the other hand, there is one job that is consistently there, constantly in front of me. It's a task that I'm sure the Lord has given to me when he asked me that same question, what are you doing here, George? And that is simply to represent and reflect accurately the character of God. doesn't sound like much of a magnificent feat. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, is going to bring you worldwide renown. It's not going to get you reported on the evening news on television. Probably not going to get you the President's Medal of, what do they call it? The gold medal that the president can award to people who do magnificent things. What do they call that medal? Medal of Freedom, thank you. I doubt that it would even qualify for something like that. But the perfect goodness in the view of other humans. Jesus showed this example. He proved that it can be done. You might think, well, George is saying, wait a minute, he's going to go out there and he's going to show people what God is like. That's a pretty conceited way to look at things. And I would have to admit to you right up front that I've been a terrible failure in that regard. And it's caused me to become kind of not only disappointed, but sometimes discouraged, a little bit despondent over the fact that I've been such a failure. But the fact is, the Lord reassures us and assures us then that there still is the possibility. Remember, when Elijah was in the cave, he offered that feeble response, didn't answer the question. Lord didn't worry about the response, didn't deal with the response that Elijah gave. He gave Elijah the instruction. The Lord does not dwell on the past. He does not focus on how we got to the cave. And he does not leave us in the cave. He didn't leave Elijah. He said, Elijah, this is what you're going to do. Now get out of here and go do it. We can be assured that that even the seemingly impossible task of representing the God of the universe is possible because Jesus showed us how to do it. It was shown in the life of Christ. Right in front, I would say, of our eyes, actually, as we look at it in through the eyes of history, but certainly in the direct view of everyone who surrounded him, Jesus proved that it is possible to live a life in the character of God and to demonstrate the goodness of our Creator. Jesus proved that. Not only did he prove it, but he showed that we should be able to go forward with that assignment ourselves. What are you doing here? What am I doing here? I think the question as it was addressed there to Elijah could be applied to us, and I think there is an answer. There are lots of answers. Some of us are doing wonderful things in the name of the Lord. But I'm impressed to share with you that my deep feeling that it is today and every day an inestimable honor, just an honor, to be entrusted by the Master of all things, entrusted with this wonderful, wonderful responsibility to represent him, not only in the eyes of the people I encounter around me every day, but actually in the view of the observing beings of an entire universe. I think that is just the greatest honor that could be bestowed. The question is there. What are you doing here? Now that question in the Old Testament account was addressed to Elijah. I'm hearing it today. I think I've heard a still small voice. Have you heard a still small voice? I don't know what it has said to you. I don't know exactly how it sounded. I don't know if it sounded like a whisper, a murmur, a soft and sweet feeling. I don't know how it sounded when you heard it or if you heard it. I know I've heard it in certain ways, and I had never yet figured out exactly how to describe the sound, but I know what it said. And I know that it's asking me the same question. Dear people, thank you for listening this morning. I really hope you have a blessed remainder of the Sabbath and another new blessed week. Thank you very much.